and Friday here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 89.3 FM, your only free radio station in town, which provides you with the opinion you can't get anywhere else, and actually gives you an opportunity to go on the air. We encourage you to get in touch with us, attend our meetings, and establish your own show, because there's a lot here in the city that is not being said, that needs to be said. There's a lot of voiceless people who can find a voice through this community radio, which is what we have here, Free Radio 89.3 FM in Santa Cruz. So, what are we going to begin with here today? Well, we got a guest we'll get into in a minute. Actually, he's going to be he's sort of our co-host for today. Mark is a local, who knows what he is. He's a man who shows up at the Food Not Bombs meals. He's now organizing people at the open-air shelter, the Back 40, the homeless campground, where the ghetto to which homeless people have been consigned, a rat-ridden field, or perhaps they've poisoned the rats now. I'm not sure what's happening out there. Mark, maybe you can tell us more about that.
Well, it's a picture does tell 1,000 words, actually. So anything that I say can be sort of cemented in your mind if you just would go down to the River Street and Coral.
River Street and Coral is right at the highway. It's right Highway 1 and River Street, right? As you turn off the freeway.
That's right. It's strategically located right next to Highway 1 and Highway 9. A delightful place to spend 8 or 9 hours going to sleep.
And there is a free meal out there every day at 4, right?
That's right. There's a meal there starting at 4, and there's a breakfast, so to speak, in the morning at 8 o'clock on weekdays, and on weekends there's a free meal, free breakfast at 9 o'clock on weekends.
Yeah, Mark, let's switch seats here. I think I want to be on your side. You can be on my side. Let's be on each other's side here.
Getting two microphones earlier.
It would be nice if we had two mics. Instead, we're kind of kissing each other here in the studio. I hope my breath isn't too bad. By the way, the music you were listening to earlier, and you'll be hearing periodically from, moment to moment here at the show when we sign off to either use the head or get a drink of water or just get mad at each other and argue, is Roy Bailey and a tape called What You Do With What You've Got. And this is it's an English singer who sings about political issues and political songs, and that's what you'll be hearing on the breaks. Also, you should be aware that we are at 89.3 FM, and if you're interested in getting on the air, I'm not an official representative of the station by any means, but you can leave a message at HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, which is my phone number, and the number, appropriately enough, is 423-HUFF, or 423-4833. If you have any comments about this show, if you want to get on the air yourself, if you feel strongly or weakly or agree and want to commend me on my great show, give me a call. And if you have more information that you think should be put on, please give me a call as well. So, Mark, why don't you... allow me to stop kissing the mic here for a minute. Move the mic up a bit. Let's see. What we were talking yesterday about what was happening out at the Back 40. Maybe you can kind of pretend you're talking to people who don't know what's going on out there, and kind of give them a brief history of yourself and what's cooking at the campground.
All right. Let's see. Really, my purpose for speaking out here is to gain the support for the homeless community that otherwise does not exist. It's important for the facts to be heard about what's going on at the River Street Shelter and what's going on in the city here, that the laws and such and the regulations that apply to homeless people or just end up affecting them in some way. And my purpose would be to reach people who might not know about this and think that the homeless are well taken care of, or at least they're tolerated to some respect. And what I'd hope is to get as many people as possible to go down there and see it, And instead of complaining about the shelter conditions and something like that, there's a lot of complaints that go to the city council, Robert, that end up saying, well, you know, it's not something we want to see. What's going on here? This is there's too much. It looks like a tent city out there or something like that, and it's dirty, and you know, we should just move them on. Really, is a sentiment that a lot of people hold. And instead of that, because that's one option, of course, to moving homeless people on, but the other option, which is equally as effective, is to be changing the conditions in which the homeless people are living in right now. And
how many people do you think who are homeless or poor are actually able or could be listening to this show? Do a lot of people have radios that you know about?
There are some. They're the people who actually know about this, and I can speak to them personally. They know the conditions, they know what's going on there, and the people that hopefully are listening don't know exactly what's going on and exactly what type of conditions there are that the city provides, so to speak.
I mean, is there, for example, a radio that they have out there, the set radio that people could tune to listen to this show or other shows? Or because we should let them know out there at the campground that if homeless people want to get on the air, they can, like yourself.
That's right. There is indeed a radio that they have, and I think they'd be open to the suggestion that we could listen to the 89.3 here and get an alternative music. Normally they listen to some other stations that play music and other things like that, and don't really act as a voice for the voiceless that at the homeless shelter there are. Many people have a lot of good things to say, and that would be able to sort of help their cause, but they haven't had the opportunity to speak out. And this is a good passive sort of medium for our voice.
Well, I think it's also, as I understand, it's also a positive possibility here too, because for real organizing, and also for putting some lighting a fire under the asses of the folks who actually control the shelter and who control the property and the policies of the campground. Now, as I understand it, the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, which is a kind of a group of so-called Good Samaritans, including Celia Scott and Paul Lee, and I don't know if Paul Fotenhauer is still on it, and well, you can run that down to me. This group runs the campground, and actually it owns the property, has since 1991. I myself have had run-ins with these people when we tried time and time again to open up the campground legally, and they instead had us arrested, and actually they opened it up last summer, finally. They got themselves a permit after, I think, certainly in some part to our protests. They got tired of the protests, and they decided that it was appropriate to open up a legal area. But these are people who you say have, you were telling me yesterday, have a sort of assigned an executive. The executive director is a man named Paul Merceau, who you had a couple of run-ins with, or at least have some disagreements on policy with. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's fair to say. Paul Merceau is the, let's see, he's a part-time now, he's a part-time director of the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Project, which includes the open-air shelter, and also includes a taxi service for homeless people from a central area that would bring them to churches around town that they might otherwise not be able to walk to.
By taxi service, you don't mean a taxi, you mean like large trucks that leave at certain times, right? I mean,
it's one van that carries 14 people, including a monitor, and it leaves however many times it can come back. It just does a circular route to different churches around the area, in fact all the way to Rio Del Mar and up to the Holy Cross Pavilion on Water Street or on Mission Street and other churches. So that's one thing that he directs and he organizes. But now he's sharing that with another man called Ron Howard, and Ron Howard is new, and he's in fact, they're both policy makers for the shelter project. And let's see,
there have been some concern. I think your most recent project has been, as I understand it, securing tents for the folks on the property, and there has been a concern of yours, I've read it in this new publication, the Street Shit Sheet, which incidentally I also write, about the fact that people at the open-air shelter, which houses about 80 to 100 people, more or less. It's actually, open-air shelter means the half-acre, quarter-acre lot that people sleep on every night out there at Highway 1 and River Streets, that in the main, they've been forbidden from using tents up to until recently, unless it was raining or the temperature dropped below a certain point. And I think your criticism of this was that people were being treated as children. They are subject to arbitrary executive decision on this. Their input was not being considered. They were not being given the basic decent treatment that they're entitled to, nor the kind of input that they're entitled to have on property that, after all, is intended for homeless use.
Yeah, this is hard to believe for someone who's new to the issue at River Street, that having gone through as much as these people have gone through, and to come to the point that they're at, where they would be seeking emergency shelter for a night or a few nights, that at that point they would be asked to sleep just with a blanket, even if they own a tent, that they could not put that tent up, and they would just have to use a blanket or lay flat on a tarp. And I spent time there, and when we were not allowed to put up tents, and I would put a piece of cardboard up, but the cardboard could not be erect. It had to be flat on me instead of being a full box and being inside the box. That was unacceptable. That was against the regulations, and I would have to break the box down and lay it flat on top of me, because there is so much moisture at that field, and in Santa Cruz, as everyone knows, that during the night I'd be completely soaked if I did not have this box over me. And it's hard to believe that that despite all these problems, that the regulations would be set up by people who are who proclaim to be directors of a homeless program, and they themselves have adopted the regulations and created and invented these regulations that inevitably end up causing suffering for the people who stay at the shelter. So it's amazing that it's taken a long time for there to be as much progress as there is.
So it has changed recently?
The progress that I'm speaking of is that people do put up tents now every night, such as last night. It was clear out, and that was regulations that Paul Marceau would have said, no, that, you know, that's not a time where people can have tents.
Well, perhaps he would have changed his mind, who knows?
Right. He doesn't go there at night, and he's never there, and he doesn't enforce these regulations, and he has other staff who would enforce these regulations, and at this point, they have ceased to enforce that regulation, that on a clear night, no one can put up a tent. And so that's definite progress, and it's amazing that it took time for us even to ask that. It's a reasonable request that we would be able to put up some sort of shelter between us and the elements, and now we seem to have that right.
But you also were telling me that there is an additional problem with people being told to get up at the crack of dawn, or perhaps, well, 8 or 8 o'clock, I think you said, and that even though the field isn't being used, there's kind of a bureaucratic process by which everyone is rousted early in the morning. You want to tell me more about that?
Yeah, this is interesting. I can back up to this last winter, which was admittedly wet and miserable for people even in homes, and most of the people, the 200 or so that are involved in the shelter project that brings them to the armory up near the De La Viega golf course. Now, those people would get there at around 8 o'clock. Everyone would be there, and we would be inside this this gymnasium building, and we'd be given mattresses and a blanket. And there'd be, like I said, about 100 people or so, and then there are 100 other people who are in different churches. And at 10 o'clock, the lights would go out. And then at 4:45 the next morning, which is something like 7 hours later, the lights would go back on, and the two or three staff would walk around waking people up at 4:45 in the morning. And let's see, and that went on for the entire, that was 6 months or 7 months that project was functioning, and And then that ended in April. And now what we have at the field is a 7 o'clock wake-up call on weekdays. So I guess we've gained, 2 hours and 15 minutes. Homeless people can sleep 2 hours and 15 minutes more. But at 7 o'clock, people are woken up. And at 8 o'clock, you have to have the field has to be cleared of all the instruments that we've used to keep the elements away from us. And if they're not cleared at 8 o'clock, then the staff walks around, and Paul Marceau has walked around in order to enforce this himself. He gets there around 8 o'clock in the morning sometimes, and he picks up people's sleeping bags and tents and throws them in a big pile near the gate. And it's just, it's really amazing that the people's last possessions can be mishandled such like that. And it's rained during the day, and I've seen people's tents and sleeping bags laying out in a big pile that they didn't put them in this pile. That was the director of the shelter project put them in that pile, and his justification is that the field needs to be cleared by 9 o'clock in order for the Homeless Resource Center to take over the lease, because there's two people who split the lease of the field on Coral and River Street, and it's the Homeless Resource Center has it from 9 to 6 during the day, and the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Project has it between 6 and, around 8 the next morning.
And for those who are novices, one, the ISSP, the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program, is the church program for sheltering people, including the open-air shelter, which is a field. And the day center includes the free meal and is directed by Karen Gillette. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah, they are different. The Citizens Committee for the Homeless is an umbrella organization for the Homeless Garden Project, for the Women's Wreath Making Project, and the Shelter Project, which is an outdoor shelter during the summer and an indoor shelter during the winter, and that they involved with the band. But the Homeless Resource Center is entirely different. They get funding through different routes. And so when they split the lease of they split responsibility, I suppose, of the field, that is used in order to make people, in order to justify moving people from the field off the field. And it's just really ridiculous, because at the around 9 o'clock, if people have left at like 9:30, they can go back out and go back to sleep. But from 8:45 to 9:15, they had to have been off. And there's nothing that goes on in the field. People do. It's not like a football field. This isn't a place where people play games. It's an unlevel, hole-ridden weeds, and it's not a good place at all to run around or anything like that. And it's really not a great place to sleep either.
Now, to put this in context, as I understand it, it's true in Santa Cruz. The audience should know that there is a thing called the sleeping ban, against which I have railed constantly, which is a city ordinance 6.36, which makes it illegal for people to sleep outside of a domicile anywhere within the city limits, even if they have to pull over and they're driving and they're tired. You fall asleep in your car, then you are up for a $168 ticket. A second offense is possibly a misdemeanor, though they've never tried it as such. The fact then is that this open-air shelter area where homeless people are herded to sleep, which only accommodates about an eighth of the homeless people in the city area, since there are at least 800 and probably more, almost surely more, in the city limits, and this is admitted by Executive Director Paul Marceau, whom I spoke to on a talk show about 3 or 4 months ago on this issue. He freely admits this, that the vast majority of homeless people are illegal, but those who wish to preserve a tenuous legal status so that if they fall asleep at 11 o'clock they don't get risk getting a ticket or a wake-up at midnight from the cops have to use this campground. And that's what makes its procedures particularly important to those people. And it's I don't want the audience to think that, it's not like gee, you know, give us golden couches to lie down on. It's more like, if we don't come to this dump, you know, we're going to get arrested, or at least we face the threat of a ticket or arrest, and in spite of what city council members may or may not say, and I speak of Scott Kennedy, for instance, who has contested me on this, there are dozens of tickets being issued each month. And more important, there's the fear of a ticket being issued, so people cannot sleep in safety because they have to constantly find a place where they're not going to be harassed by police, so they cannot put themselves in an area where they might not be assaulted, as four homeless people were beaten 3 or 4 months ago by the Gale brothers, who were convicted of that crime. One of them subsequently died after that, allegedly of an alcohol incident that was unrelated, but getting beaten about having your bones broken with pipes is not particularly conducive to doing well. Anyway, that's why I think it's particularly important that these procedures come under public scrutiny, and also that the clients have something significant to say. They're the ones who have to use this field. This has been my feeling. And Mark, you've been organizing around this and actually securing more tents through the Above the Line Community Coalition. But I'm wondering what kind of, well, you were telling me what kind of procedures people have as far as grievances go in terms of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. And I was suggesting to you it might be useful to start petitioning changing those policies so that the executive director does not have the sole authority to say, well, you know, pick up your tent at 8 o'clock or we evict you for the summer, as I understand was done with one man at least. Any plans to change the grievance policies or to press for a grievance policy? I understand you are now working with this Above the Line Community Coalition, which may give you some punch.
Yeah, there's no question that the people at the shelter need to be allowed the freedom to empower themselves in order to change and monitor their own lives. It's ridiculous that a 40-year-old man or woman is woken up at 7 o'clock in the morning because they may or may not be able to get up at 8 or whenever they want to, really. This isn't an indoor shelter project. This isn't closely monitored. There's almost no guidelines for someone being woken up at 7 in the morning. Really, there's nowhere for them to go to be stripped of that right, to be stripped of the fundamental right to wake yourself up at 40 years old is just humiliating. And in my 20s, being asked to be woken up, being told to woken up, being really forced at all, there's not really a question of choice there. And so that being stripped of that choice inevitably leads to the disempowerment of the individuals sleeping there. They can rely more and more on the monitors to be their conscience and to be their parental figure, and with that, and then that ends up leading back to Paul Marceau, who's being the parental figure, the social conscience of the homeless people, because if they're not allowed to make those choices themselves, basically they're being punished for being homeless. The overall view is that, well, because they're homeless, they must not be able to make these decisions on their own, and obviously that's not true. But if you continually strip them of that decision, not even allow them to make the decision of when to get up or when to eat, then you're not going to have high functioning people. You know, if not to empower them is to deny them of that ability to monitor their own futures.
Any support among homeless people who are using that campground area for reforming these procedures? I understand you had a tent revolt a bit ago, which I wrote about in the Street Shit Sheet, which you told me about, which was that people were, one evening, even though there was a sign up, no tents, tomorrow's going to be clear, or some such thing.
Yeah.
But, I mean, rather than belabor the incident there, what I understand you told me there was something of a rebellion. The people put up their tents, and the staff are now perhaps showing more recognition of what the people want there. But is there real, you have support among people there to press for real changes? And I don't want to make Paul Marceau the complete bad guy here, because, first of all, because I don't sleep out there. Maybe he is the complete bad guy, but I haven't brought these matters to his attention, and I hope to do so. And also to invite him to come on the show. Paul, if you're listening, you're invited to come on the show and to respond to these concerns. But, I mean, it seems to me there should be a grievance process by which people have real, not just input, but real power, at least joint power, because they use this area. And the idea that the people who use the area are somehow 6 years old or drunken and crazy, that seems to be the underlying idea that they cannot themselves regulate themselves. That seems to be their theory. But is there, since you have now, as I was saying, more pull with this above-the-line community coalition, or the homeless coalition that is formed, which I'm going to give more information about. In fact, let me do that right now. Let me give an update on the above-the-line. Well, maybe you could answer first that question. Are you planning to seek any kind of grievance procedure or structural changes that will allow you, whatever the concern, whether it's tents, whether it's maybe somebody being kicked out unfairly, whether it's a water problem, whether it's a dirty porta-potty. I understand the porta-potty situation ain't so good out there. That you'll have more input, and the voice of the people in the campground can be heard, and possibly the people in the campground can contribute more, other than simply be kind of a 50-cent slave laborer as they were last summer. I understand you had to pay 50 cents or do an hour's work or something like that. And if I put this rather dramatically, it's because it's not a comfortable situation, as I've heard, for people in the midst of it, and they don't often want to complain, because complaining may mean subjecting themselves to some kinds of sanctions. I mean, it's if you have to, that's the only legal place to sleep, you're not going to criticize it.
That's right. That's right. I feel that way, that I'm under the eye, so to speak, of the staff, and that I'm afraid for my, I don't know, my status there as sort of a floater, and that I'm just there and I'm not trying to make too many waves or something like that, because there have been times where people have really protested my speaking out and my trying to talk to other people and saying, you know, just why don't you stay out of it? If you don't like it, then leave. And that's been the attitude of a lot of people.
Do you have much support now, do you think?
There's, you know, I just talk to people mainly and try to relate their emotions to Paul Marceau, because they may otherwise be wary of the power that he holds, and to Ron Howard also. And there is some movement to towards Ron Howard and Paul Marceau in order to get them to, I don't know, let the individuals sleeping there have a more democratic or consensual process towards the regulations and the policy that's being enforced there.
Well, rather than directed to these individuals, which may be good too, have you ever considered directing it toward the Citizens Committee in terms of a specific proposal for including on an institutional basis, in terms of procedures, the opinions and the feelings and the thoughts and the decisions of those who actually use the place?
Yeah, that's interesting, because Paul Marceau shares authority. He is the executive director of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, and so it's kind of like making a complaint about the chief of police. Like, who do you go to if the chief of police is, you know, is being somehow aberrant behavior? So there's I don't know, I wouldn't know. There's city council people who are on the board of directors for the Citizens Committee for the Homeless.
Celia Scott,
yeah, she's the only city council woman. And see, well, so those would be the people to go to as far as the homeless individuals making
a complaint. Really considered any proposal to actually make an institutional change in this, so that there's a new practice whereby the opinion of homeless people is routinely consulted, or at least the protest of homeless people who use the area has to be considered. Mm. Again, I feel a little wary because we don't have Paul here, and I haven't really spoken to him about this, and this is my dereliction. I haven't done it, but you know, I'll get in touch with him, and hopefully I'll be able to get some kind of interview with him or comments from him on this. I don't mean to put it wholly on his head. I mean, there is an institutional practice of ignoring, infantilizing, and dismissing people who are poor, people who are not in power. That's been my experience over the last 8 years.
Yeah, let's see. Well, he does, Paul Marceau does have his reasons, and they're conservative reasons. They're not They're not malicious or in any way. He mainly looks at it as, I was talking about this last night, that the people can't abuse privacy that they never get. And that's the idea behind the tents, and that's the idea about moving people outside.
They might smoke dope. They might drink.
Yeah, exactly.
They
exactly.
might fuck. Who knows?
They might, right. In fact, one of the regulations is you can't be nude at the shelter or in any of the shelters. You cannot be nude. And I mean, just try to imagine that, I guess.
Is there a bar on sexual couples. Activity per se?
Oh, absolutely. Well, if you can't get nude, you know, obviously
hey,
it's
I
pretty
tough. I can have my clothes on. I can get it together in that way. let me ask you, Mark, to see if you can get the tape changed. I'm trying to record the show. And I'll make a few more announcements, and then we'll continue with you. Let me switch seats with you for a minute. I forget you to do that. So you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 89.3 FM in Santa Cruz. This is Free Radio. If you have comments on this show, it's not a live line, but if you want to contact me, you can call me at 423-4833. I will respond to what you say. If you have a statement you want to make, I'll read it over the air at my next show, Monday morning at 10. This is a Monday and Friday show. And I'll also, if you're interested in doing your own show, I'll put you in touch with people who can help you to do that. It's we're trying to make this as open a situation as possible, free radio. And I guess, I think I forgot the page that I was going to read over the air, but I wanted to make some announcements about what's upcoming. I'll have to do a lot of this from memory. I hope I don't screw up. Today is the 12th. Yesterday, May 11th, was the anniversary of the mini police riot downtown where Mayor Scott, Squawkbox Scott Kennedy, as I call him in the street shit sheet, authorized sending the police down in riot gear, dozens and dozens of cops, to arrest people who were peacefully sitting on the sidewalk supporting the right of poor people to eat at the Food Not Bombs meal at Cathcart and Pacific. Dozens of people were charged with criminal offenses. No one, not one, was convicted. There was one case, however, that the city and the DA decided to prosecute to the limit. That's the Lisa Henry case, the first case which actually was resulted in the sitting ban being thrown out. A second sitting ban was later passed by council a month later, and it is currently in force. But the first sitting ban was thrown out. Instead of saying, oh, well, it was thrown out, we got a new law, these clowns in City Hall have decided to spend your money to put this case into appeal, and the Superior Court, the Appellate Division of the Superior Court yesterday kicked the case ahead to July 13th in Department 9. So for any of you who are wondering what happened in the Lisa Henry case, the answer is nothing. They're just spending more money talking about it longer and going on and on. And they are still arresting, I should say, citing people. I haven't heard of an actual in-custody arrest since the Eric Marcus case. They did arrest a man, Eric Marcus, for sitting on the sidewalk peacefully off to the side at the corner of Lincoln and Cathcart. I'm sorry, Lincoln and Pacific. And he was convicted of that in the court of the same judge, Commissioner Salazar, who overturned the first ordinance. And he was sentenced to a $101 fine. And that case is currently on appeal. Margaret Marr, local civil liberties attorney, is appealing that case. And we'll let you know when we hear about it what happens there, though Marr frequently doesn't confide in me what goes on. We have, not the best relationship. But still, there are good people who disagree. Good news, however, comes from Berkeley this week. Proposition O, which was the city of Berkeley's copycat ordinance, in which they kind of did what Santa Cruz did, only a little less so. It's a somewhat more liberal ordinance than Santa Cruz's April downtown ordinance, anti-sitting, anti-panhandling laws. Proposition O, which barely passed at the last election, was thrown out by a federal judge, and that happened actually in April. And what happened was the ACLU, American Civil Liberties Union, and several homeless panhandlers applied for an injunction which would force the city not to enforce this law, which essentially says you can't sit down within 6 feet of a building and restricts panhandling and so forth. We're not talking about peaceful panhandling. This restricts all panhandling. And that's the problem with the Santa Cruz Ordinance. If the Santa Cruz Ordinance were talking about violent or abusive behavior, it would be one thing. What it does talk about instead is it talks about being within a certain distance of a person, asking for a dime peacefully or some food peacefully at night, asking from a sitting position. All of these kind of qualifications become a basis for harassment, and it becomes solely the discretion of the officer. He can ignore the little boy who is a middle-class person who asks for a dime, and he can go after and harass the grubby-looking guy or woman who's sitting on the sidewalk and asking for money. It's illegal to ask for money when you're sitting down, even on a public bench here in Santa Cruz. But up in Berkeley, as I said, there was encouraging news. And I'm going to read to you from the Berkeley Voice, a community newspaper in Berkeley, which talks about the April case. And there was actually a decision last week which essentially confirmed what that federal judge decided. The federal judge essentially said, you can't enforce any aspect of this law except for the lying down section. There's a section which I call the Rotkin section, because Councilmember Mike Rotkin made sure that when they changed the law after our law was thrown out in August, made a second no-sit-on-the-sidewalk law, sit near a shop, go to jail, that they made sure that anywhere, if you lie down in a business district or a business residential district or even the beach boardwalk district, if you are stretched out on the sidewalk, even not blocking traffic, that is itself a crime. Actually, in Santa Cruz, in order for it to be criminal for you to sit down, by the law, you have to be within 10 feet of a storefront, 4 feet of a telephone or drinking fountain, or 50 feet of a change-making machine, which could become significant because change-making machines means Coke machines. It means anything except a paper rack or a parking meter. Those two are not considered change-making machines. So what happened up in Berkeley? I'm going to read the story, see if you're interested. This is by Brian Caulfield from the April 27th Berkeley Voice. A federal judge has blocked enforcement of a series of controversial Berkeley laws designed to curb panhandling. U.S. District Judge Claudia Wilkins struck down key provisions of Measure O, the anti-panhandling package approved by voters in November, and blocked enforcement of the rest of the law while she considered its legality. And again, 3 days ago, the rest of the law was also thrown out with the small exception of lying down on the sidewalk, which was not thrown out, but I'm informed by Berkeley activists last night when I was up north that even that part of the law is not being enforced. But the city of Berkeley has decided to appeal the case, so their taxpayers get to pay for more legal shenanigans to make innocent behavior illegal, because merchants run the show, and people in the hills apparently run the show as well. And incidentally, when this matter came up for a vote in November, the areas where panhandlers panhandle, the downtown areas, voted against Measure O. It was only the areas in the hills that voted in favor of it. And nobody panhandles in the Berkeley Hills, as far as I know, or it ain't done too much. Continuing this story in the Berkeley Voice, the rulings came in response to a challenge to the law's constitutionality by the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union, on behalf of two local panhandlers and political groups. Wilkins said last Friday, that's in April, she will issue preliminary injunctions against Berkeley ordinances restricting panhandling at night and panhandling within 6 feet of a building. Wilkins also said she will issue a temporary restraining order blocking enforcement of recently passed laws against sitting or lying on the sidewalk, panhandling within 10 feet of an ATM. That's 10 feet, notice. Berkeley only bars it within 10 feet, and that, of course, is overthrown. But to give you an idea, our law is so much worse, we bar it within 50 feet. And aggressive panhandling, as she considers their legality. As an injunction has been issued, and I guess that injunction is now a preliminary injunction. It starts out, the way it works in the courts, first you get a TRO, a temporary restraining order, which can stop certain kind of behavior. Then you go and get a preliminary injunction, and then sometime later you get a permanent injunction. So right now the city of Berkeley cannot enforce the laws against sitting down on the sidewalk. Of course, what they're doing, as I mentioned in my last show, is they have picked out another ordinance to enforce, which makes it illegal to sit on a piece of anything on the sidewalk. So if you sit on a milk crate, it's illegal, and they've been running around giving tickets to panhandlers and poor people to drive them away based on that law, which was originally intended to make sure that merchants do not have displays out on the sidewalk. And I should advise you, and of course I'm sure you probably already know already, that no merchant has gotten a ticket in the pendency of this 43-year law for doing that. or perhaps that's a little extreme. Certainly in the last two or three years, when dozens of homeless people have been ticketed, when one man, David Nadell, the owner of the Ashkenaz, was arrested and taken to jail in a videotaped arrest for sitting down, that was a sting operation that civil liberties groups performed in Berkeley in order to catch the police violating the rights of people. Nadell's case was thrown out of court. The Civilian Police Review Board up there found that Nadell's rights had been violated, and of course the city manager ignored the whole thing and told the police to go right ahead and do what they're doing. And they're doing it even as we speak, or they were when I was up there several weeks ago, and I understand that practice continues, ticketing people who sit on milk crates, not blocking the sidewalk, just off to the side. Incidentally, there was also a situation where the merchants got permission from city council to get waivers. For example, if you have furniture out on the sidewalk, you can apply for a waiver and get exempted from this law. Well, the merchants are so confident that they're not going to be hassled that not one merchant, as of 4 days ago, had gotten a waiver. So there's plenty of sidewalk furniture out there that the merchants are using, and of course, the only people getting hassled are the poor and homeless people and the people who need to ask for spare change. Continuing this story, federal judge shoots down Proposition O in the April 27th Berkeley Voice. The ruling by Claudia Wilkins, federal judge, means trouble for Measure O, since imposing a preliminary injunction implies Wilkins believes the ACLU would win if the case went to trial. The city will now have to decide if it wants to pursue a trial on the portions of the law that have been blocked. And as I told you earlier, that trial was pursued, and earlier this week, the judge found in favor of the poor people, and the city is now appealing that decision. While Wilkins issued injunctions against only two provisions of the law, and now, of course, the entire law has been enjoined, except for the lying down portion, and none of it is being enforced, she hinted she could strike down other provisions as well. The only things that could hold up is the ATM restrictions and the threatening and hounding panhandling provisions under the U.S. Constitution, and I am not sure even those can hold up under the California Constitution, and apparently she decided they couldn't hold up because, as I said earlier this week, she struck it all down. A word about ATMs. This has become a sort of a rallying cry. San Francisco passed an ordinance, I guess it was a year or two ago, which makes it illegal to sit near an ATM, the idea being that somehow this is going to make those poor middle-class people, like myself, uncomfortable when they take their money out of the ATM machine. Well, you know, why should the public be asked to fund security forces for the banks? If the banks decide they're going to do their business on the sidewalk, then let them provide security. I mean, if they want to hire a guard to walk up and down to make sure that people don't get robbed, well, that's good. You know, that's fine. But the idea that the city is going to prevent anybody from feeling guilty or uncomfortable and thereby make it illegal for people to sit down near an ATM suddenly privatizes huge portions of the sidewalk, particularly in Santa Cruz, where it's illegal to sit within 50 feet of an ATM, and our dear ACLU here locally has not seen fit to follow what its brother organization or sister organization up north did in seeking an immediate injunction. In Berkeley, the minute that law went into effect, the ACLU was there asking that the entire thing be thrown out. Well, that ain't happening here, perhaps because of the close ties between the ACLU and the city council, perhaps because the ACLU is timid on the matter. Who knows? I mean, they say it's a matter of strategy. Let's look at the other cities. I mean, and there's something to be said for that. But it's also true that the ACLU attorneys that I've spoken with, including Bob Tarrin and, Isabel Gilman, Eisenberg, all the people who run the ACLU, have known for years that it's illegal, for example, people to sleep outside after 11, and it's blatantly discriminatory class legislation, and they've never offered support in any significant way to challenges. It's only been independent lawyers like Kate Wells and Ray Gruneich and to some extent Ed Fry, Ben Rice occasionally, who have stepped forward and offered to help a little bit now and then and kind of upheld the redeemed the conscience of the city and the conscience of the legal community in this matter. And the same thing is true in the Danner recall, by the way. Those of you who have been following the question of Art Danner, the district attorney, he's the guy who loves to prosecute drug cases, so-called hemp cases, herb cases, goes after homeless activists, doesn't mind padding the payroll so he can avoid scandals at election time in the Catherine Gardner case, gets off of drunk driving stuff when he hits and broadsides a woman in 1987, hits her from the side, he gets away with no blood test, she's immediately whisked away for a blood test. You heard about this from Ed Fry earlier this week. he's being recalled. Danner is. And I'm losing my train of thought here. Let's see if I can get it back. We're talking about Proposition O and how it, the Berkeley anti-panhandling, anti-sitting law was struck down. And that really has great significance for us here, because here the same laws, worse laws, are in effect, and we are in the same district. Unfortunately, there's a kind of a small technicality that means the case doesn't go to the same judge. So we could get a right-wing judge if we applied it, and we could get a bad decision. That's true. But it should put the city on notice, and it should inform the rest of us that there are at least a couple of courageous judges who are willing to stand up and give us the right to sit down, for God's sake. So what else we got? This article on Proposition O goes on. I'm hoping I can make it publicly available. Hopefully there'll be a longer article about the more recent decision. And I'll read you a little bit more about it. When they passed this measure, they put in a carrot as well. They added a whole bunch of social programs. That's one of the reasons they got the votes they did at the election for Proposition O. They said, well, if you'll make it illegal for these homeless people to sit down in public, if you'll make it illegal so we can clear the streets of the unsightly debris of human beings that we don't want to look at, we'll give them some social service pilot programs. You know, we'll give them like a dirty old field out by Highway 1, you know, that the Berkeley equivalent. They actually aren't going to give them, they aren't giving them a place to sleep, and that's a continuing controversy in Berkeley. It's illegal to sleep up there too. Somewhat different law. Ours is worse, and who's to say which is more stringently enforced? Actually, Santa Cruz does not enforce its anti-sleeping and anti-homeless laws as rigidly, for example, as San Francisco and Mayor Jordan with his Matrix program, although there are areas in San Francisco where you can sleep and camp and sit down without problems. It's just the San Francisco Führer, Mayor Juggernaut Jordan, as I call him, wants to make sure that the downtown areas are cleansed of homeless people, and he is successful.